Okay, we're continuing from last time. We're saying this is Siman Pei Vav, beginning of Siman Pei Vav. As I mentioned last time, Siman Pei Vav is about which eggs are kosher. That's what we're going to be focusing on in Siman Pei Vav. And the first halacha is that tells the mamash about eggs, and specifically how to know which is from a kosher bird or not from a kosher bird. So we've been doing some things from Siman Pei Beis, that's where we're continuing from Siman Pei Beis. The Siman Pei Beis is actually about which birds are kosher. So that is to say, in Siman Pei Beis, it's about if you have a bird in front of you and you want to know if it's kosher. This is what you have to decide, how you look at it and how you decide. Siman Pei Vav is you don't have a bird, you just have an egg, you want to decide, okay? But obviously those questions are very connected to each other, so we're doing Pei Beis, those things from Pei Beis first, this time and last time, and then we'll continue on to Siman Pei Vav. Okay, so last time we spoke about different simanim that can be for a bird, how you know a bird is kosher. The Mishnah gives us a bunch of different simanim, how you know a bird is kosher, and that Ashkenazim, we only rely on Masorah to know if a bird is kosher. Even though there are ways to know a bird is kosher, even without a Masorah, theoretically, to know that a bird is kosher, and one thing in particular that we mentioned then that's going to come up again is a shiloh about what happens if two birds, the Gemara says that a kosher animal and a treif animal can't breed, can't mate, and produce a viable child. But there's a machlokes in our friend whether the same thing applies for birds also, which would be for us as a kula. If we say that it's a kula, that's a kula, because it said is, if bird A, I have a Masorah that is kosher, and bird B, I don't know if it's kosher, I don't have a Masorah on it, but then we see that they mate and they produce other birds from them, then that would be a simon that the other bird is kosher. Now, the one that we didn't have Masorah is not kosher also. Many are simon on that, and we'll see that'll come up again today. Okay, so today we're going to talk about, the plan is to talk about four different kinds of birds, okay, chickens and turkeys and ducks and robins, okay, you'll hear, okay, so like this, so the bird that has to keep people entertained, you know, so the most commonly ate bird, okay, I've had how many zillions of birds, of chickens people eat is chickens, okay. And chicken is also, to us, we look at it, it's the bird that's the most pushed in the server. Everybody eats chicken. There's all over the place, people eating chickens, okay? But it turns out, okay, that life is never as simple as we think it is, that there are many, many breeds of chicken. In the big class of things that are called chicken, there are lots of different things. As an example, the American Poultry Association has 57 different breeds of chicken. And some of those themselves have broken down versions within them. And this one that's called Ariel is a black-breasted and a dark and a spangled and a wheaten and a white. Okay, so within there's 57 bigger groups, and within them there are other ones. So there's lots of things. What? Yeah, it's something like that. So there's lots of different things that are called chicken, okay? So the word chicken is a little bit broad. And what I say is that in the United States, chickens are broken in the whole world into two groups. Okay? As far as industrially, they're broken into two groups. There are ones that we eat, those called broilers, okay? Those are the birds that we eat, and the other ones that are egg layers. Okay? And those are not the same. Those are two different groups of birds that are the egg layers, and the broilers are two different groups. Okay? So today I'm talking to you, we're going to start with the egg layers. Okay? And there are two main birds that are used for egg laying. The idea is, if you're a guy with a chicken in your backyard, you take whatever eggs you can get. But when you're running commercially, you want to get as many eggs for as little food as you can. That's the goal. So the bird that lays the most eggs and the most consistently and feed them the least, etc., that's the bird you want to have. So for white eggs, we use a bird called a white leghorn. That's the name of the bird that they use. And for browns, it's different kinds, but they use mainly something called a Rhode Island red. Okay, these two different breeds of birds. So there's two questions came up in recent years about the white leghorn. No question? Oh, just stretch it. Okay. So two questions came up in recent years about the white leghorns. Okay. So before I tell those two questions, let me sidetrack for a second about the Rhode Island red. Okay. This question I'm about to tell you is really a question that came up about lots of chicken. And that was like this. Okay. Oops, sorry, wrong bird. I'll show you later. Okay, so the first question that came up with the white leghorn was, I told you last time that the Gemara has a rule and says, if a bird sits with two fingers in the front and two fingers in the back, that's how he sits, it's called to perch, it sits on a piece of wood, on a string actually, the Gemara says if it's perched with two fingers in the front and two in the back, that's a simon that it's a treif bird, and if it sits with three fingers in the front and one finger in the back, that's a simon of a kosher bird. Okay, so what happened was, there were people went to a farm, And they went to an egg-laying facility, whatever you want to call it, and they saw that the white leghorns were sitting with two fingers in the front and two fingers in the back. The Gemara says, if you have two fingers in the front and two in the back, the bird is treif. So they said, aha, it must be that the white leghorns are treif, because if you're sitting there with two fingers this way and two fingers that way, that's a raya, that they're a treif bird.
Can we wrap the eggs, though?
That what? What's the right?
Is there a for the eggs?
So we're going to next time to what's the smell for the eggs. There are no simon for an egg that tells you it's for sure a kosher bird. We have simon for an egg that tells you it's for sure a treif bird. There are no simon for an egg that tells you it's for sure is kosher. That's a simple understanding. Okay. So they looked at these white leghorns and they were sitting this funny way. And of course they were very upset, perturbed by that. And so there's this person, I think he's from Bnei Brak, I might be wrong, Reb Chizkiyo Yosef Kain, okay? And this person said, in the letters that he wrote, he said he spent 7 months studying these birds, okay? And what he did was like this. He watched the white leghorns. He also watched birds that we knew are kosher, like a dove. Okay, he knew those are kosher birds. And he watched birds that are treif, okay? And he found was like this, that it's true that kosher birds sometimes sit with two fingers in the front and two in the back. But that's only while they're getting themselves adjusted. While they're just settling themselves down onto the seat that they're in, they could sit like that temporarily, okay? But when they're comfortable and they're happy and they're raised well, then they sit three in the front and one in the back. And even the white leghorns do that thing also. And treif birds don't do that. Treif birds, when they're happy and comfortable, that's when they're sitting two and two. And so when the Gemara says that two fingers in the front and two in the back is a symbol of treif, means that when the bird is ready and comfortable the way it's supposed to be. But even kosher birds that we know are kosher, forget the white leghorns that you could tie in, maybe that breed of chicken is not kosher. Well, birds that we knew that are for sure kosher, those birds sit temporarily two and two when they're not comfortable, they're on a slant, they just didn't get settled down yet. So he was happy with that. And he says that he brought Dayanum from the Ada to farms to look at it and showed it to them. Okay, he showed it to themselves to show them that that's what the birds do. In other words, these birds that we're considering as kosher, it's true you could catch them sitting with two fingers like this and fingers like that, but really that's not how they sit when they're comfortable. And I guess he showed them the other birds, those that are for sure kosher and treif, and they were happy, and everybody's happy. Okay, now the second question is a more recent question, and that is, maybe the white leghorns, maybe it's the bird. The Torah lists of 18 birds. The Gemara says it's really 24 birds. The Torah lists of 20 birds, and it's really 24 birds. They say, and guess what? The white leghorn is what the Torah calls a duchifas. Okay? How did they come up with that? Where did they decide that a white leghorn chicken was a duchifas? Of all things! Where did they come up with that one from? So here it goes like this. The Gemara says like this. The Gemara says that a duchifas, the word duchifas is a contraction, okay, from the word hoidoi, kafus, okay? So it's pride, excuse me, is folded over, okay? So the word duchifas is a contraction, the Gemara says, from those... what does the pride mean? That means is that what it's called the comb. The comb, what sticks up on the top, it's comb. Okay, let's assume that the hoid is a comb that sits on the top, and it's folded over. So they said, if you look, if I remember, it's the female, I think, leghorns, their comb folds down, okay, it like droops down, okay, in some places they would call it a strimal, okay, because the way it sat around the chicken's head, okay, so its comb is folded down, so they said, aha, maybe the leghorn is a duchifas, in which case it's treif, okay? You're going to see in a second. You're going to see in a second. So the answer is, of course, the reason why it's not correct is because Rashi, on the Gemara, Rashi in Chumash tells you what the duchifas is in French, okay, and that word is a hupo, okay, and when you see the hupo, you'll know exactly what it means, hoidoi kafos, okay? A duchifas is hoidoi kafos, okay, and this is a hupo, okay? He doesn't just have a comb. He's got a very unusual, beautiful comb, okay? That's hoidoi. And sometimes it's kafos, sometimes it folds it down, okay? And its comb gets folded down. So when it says hoidoi kafos, so that comb is obviously much more stunning and unusual than a chicken one. Okay, the chicken one is nice, you know what I mean? It's got a nice comb, but nothing like this bird. And Rashi tells us that that's the bird. This is the bird that's a duchifas. That we don't worry about that question. Now, you should know that the people, okay, So this question, of this idea that I told you, this is a more recent question that maybe it's a dukhi for us, okay, of all things, okay, of all things that maybe it's a dukhi, the chicken is really a dukhi for us, of all things that should maybe be, that maybe what it is, you should know that this question didn't come out of no place, okay. This part has been for the past 2-3 years, I don't know how long it's been, there's been an ongoing tumult as to whether the chickens we eat are kosher, okay, and you may not know about this. This has been going on for a couple years, and every couple of days, somebody, I kid you not, every bunch of, maybe not every couple of days, maybe every week, somebody comes out with a kuntres that's another 30 pages long. Almost never are the kuntres signed. Okay, in the past couple of years, I got one that's 29 pages, and another one that's 56 pages, okay, that are, usually they're not signed, okay. We'll explain to you why our side is completely right, and that side is completely wrong. There are the people who are in favor of the birds we eat now, and then the people who are, those are horrible birds, and we only eat, they eat on other birds, and each side thinks the other side is horrible and terrible. And really what happens is like this, where this whole tumult starts from, okay, where this whole thing come from, that people have been mamish, how much ink has been written on this thing, on whether it is like this. The birds that we have, the chickens that we have, okay, 1,000 years ago, the chickens that we have were not nearly as productive, we'll use it, as they are now. Okay, I told you. For egg laying, you want one that lay as many eggs every day. I think white liquids lay 300 eggs a year. Okay? They're really productive, okay? And you want, for broilers, the ones that you eat, you want ones that get really fat, really quickly, for very little food. You know, you put in very little and get out a lot. That's the goal. It's almost commercial. So how do we get birds that went from this to this? So what happened was, it seems, that the birds, the Asian birds, were much more plump and nicer looking than the European birds. So there's theories that the Cochin chickens, which are came from Asia, were bred with the European chickens to make all kinds of breeds that are even better, okay? Now, what's unusual about the Cochin chickens, there's a few things, is that their legs are covered with feathers. Okay. That's one way of looking at it. As opposed to a regular chicken, that there's no feathers, there isn't that much feather on the leg. Okay, so there's theories that that's what was happened. That the original chicken, which we call now, they think is what we call the jungle fowl. Okay, which is a little not so plump looking as ours are today, was bred with these guys to make a chicken. So that was happening hundreds of years ago, and there's lots of. If you look in Daki Tshuva, there are pages of Daki Tshuva about all different kinds of birds that are being brought from funny places to know, and then they're mixing the chickens. They're a little like our chickens.
Daki Tshuva?
Yeah.
On the tour, that has like three lines on a thing, now he has pages?
Daki Tshuva. Yeah. Daki Tshuva. Pages of all kinds of things about different kinds of birds that are being brought from different places. So what happened was like this. All this was going on, and every time they bring in a new bird or a new breed, there are tshuvas written about these things. But came along about 100 years ago, when things got much more commercial, people started breeding them commercially. It wasn't just three guys in the backyard. And what happened was, nobody really knows what happened. And what is it? What do they do to make birds that look like these birds, okay? To make our birds that we have today, the super-duper birds that we have nowadays, nobody's too sure what happens. So now, some people said this. Look, Nathan Nezer says. I told you last time. Nathan Nezer says, just like the Gemara says, by animals, if a kosher animal and a trade animal cannot mate and produce a viable offspring. So same thing by birds also. It's a shayla b'chayin. Nathan Nezer says that's correct. It's by birds also. In which case, let's say they use the Cochin chicken or something else, whatever they use to mate with regular chickens, what we would call a regular chicken, and it produce offspring that had new features to it. But if it was able to do that, how goofy is a riot that chicken is also a kosher chicken?
Where does it say that?
It's a Gemara. We mentioned it last time. I forgot what the Gemara is. I mentioned it last time. The Gemara says that they can't mate with each other and produce viable offspring. And that's because it's not clear whether the same thing is for birds also. They must have the animals. I have no idea. So there's been lots of tumbling about this kind of stuff. So what happens is like this. So the people who are making this tumult, aside from all the things that they have to say, like things like maybe it's a duke for us and things like that, they also have been digging up old, that's not a nice way to say it, finding out old shechtim to say to them, yeah, this is the bird that I did shecht, this is the bird that I didn't shecht. And they tried to make new birds. You made it for the Breakel chicken, okay? That was a bird. They said, yeah, this bird was never touched. It wasn't so clear that it wasn't touched. And then they had a new idea. They said, we're going to use the white leghorns. One of the sides says that leghorns are safer. Leghorns have been pretty stable for a long time. So they said, well, we're going to do it like this. If you think about it, which leghorn? Leghorns lay eggs, okay? They're egg layers. So that means if a leghorn chicken lays an egg, now there's some eggs that they go good for eating, of course, go to the supermarket. But then they have to have new leghorn chickens, so they have to hatch those eggs. So guess what happens? Leghorn chickens, half their eggs hatch into females, half of them hatch into males. The ones that hatch into females, that's great, that's what you want, they lay eggs. The ones that hatch into males are never going to lay an egg in their life, right? They're males. What do you do with it now? Okay, so if you took just the egg and sold it to the supermarket, there's a big difference. But if you want to, when you hatch them, someone's got to hatch them so we have more leghorns tomorrow, so you get stuck with these male leghorn chickens. So usually they get killed, that's the truth. But these people said, we'll start selling them. Since we know leghorns are kosher, we'll sell them as kosher leghorns. Okay, get it? They can use the male leghorns that nobody wants anyhow. They're raising them and selling them because they say we're short chicken kosher. So again, so one side says, you guys are terrible and we're the greatest. And this other guy says, no, we got it right and you guys have it wrong. Lots of tumult. By no means can I possibly go through all that and understand what they said. But just to finish off.
This breeding could have been done by who knows, some peasant farmer, who knows where. Nobody can reliably say we have a history going back. It's all a whole chicken.
And therefore what?
And therefore, it looks like a chicken.
Yes, he's right. That most people take the approach is, basically they look to say, no, some of the chickens are really strange, okay, and they say, we don't know about those. But basically, regular chicken looks like a chicken that's kosher. I forgot to mention, the people, all these, the tumult is hanging on one pillar, and that is about 20 years ago, I might be wrong with the years, I have to look at my paper, they brought the Soravalsa and they said that people have been breeding all kinds of chickens and what should we do? Maybe they bred and trade animals, other trade birds or trade chickens and so what should we do? And Russ says, you know, it's a shiloh, we have to look into it. Well, he didn't say it's also. He said, we have to look into it with the Soravalsa. So all of them are hanging on that shuvah for Revolsner, who says, you know, we should be careful and look into these things. But again, like I said, most people just say, come on, it looks like a chicken. This looks like a chicken. So it was a little
scary. There's something you can do about it. You can't track it.
So you should just know. One last thing about the chickens is that, as you know, there's a very, I don't know if he's the expert in the world, but from among the experts in understanding the kashrus of birds, Reb Chaim Loike at OU. Okay, he's written a number of svarim on it. He just knows a lot about it. But he raises birds himself. He's the guy. So he,
Manhattan.
What?
Manhattan.
So the OU was asked to give hashkocha on a breed of chicken. Okay, to say that this breed of chicken we have in the Sardon. Okay, so the only person who could make that decision, who could really look at it, was Chaim Loike, of course. So they sent him in. They locked him into a room to show him. To lock him, show him all kinds of secret records that they have of how they breed the chickens. And what it is like this. The companies, there are two big companies in the world who make all the chickens that we eat. Two American companies that make the chickens. One company, Cobb, who's worked with them, who they said to him, it is like this. They showed him essentially it's like this. There were all kinds of people breeding. The Cobb people, at a certain point in history, 40, 50 years ago, they closed breeds. That is to say, they took a breed and they said, this is a chicken, chicken A, this is the breed that we like, this is a one breed that we like, and we're not going to breed it further with other things. We will select it within it, which is to say, let's say what they decide is we want a bird that has, the bird that has skin that's more yellow, or that has more white meat instead of more dark meat, or has less feathers, or whatever kind of feature we look for. So they selectively breed. I mean, they within, when 1,000 chickens are born, they want the one with the least feathers. They of 1,000 that are born, they take the 3 that have the least feathers, and they breed those further. So they get more and more and more that have less and less feathers, okay? But the breeds that they have are locked. This is a better word. They have not locked. Closed. They have a closed line. And they have a group of closed lines. Let's say, I think it's 5 or 6. I've already told me. And then they breed those within the closed lines to create special variations, but the closed lines are closed and they don't touch. And those closed lines have been closed for 50, 60 years. And then Chaim went through their records to show that those ones that are closed have never been bred with other things since. Okay? And then the chicken that we have today is just a selective breeding, which is to say, again, they pulled out the one with the features that you like. Let's say Shechtim, Shaykh them like chickens that don't have feathers on their necks. Okay? I don't know if the non-kosher slaughterhouses care about that, but the kosher slaughterhouses do. So, if you want a breed that has less feathers on the neck, they keep finding the ones that have the least feathers on them in that place, and they keep breeding those again and again and again to get a special one that's good for you that has the least feathers. Okay? Or that has yellow meat instead of white meat, or the other way around. I forgot the skin color makes a difference to people. All kinds of features that you want, they can be, but the loins are locked. To the point that in the end, the OU now actually gives hashkacha on a specific breed, the Cobb 500, it's a very, very popular broiler. They give hashkacha that that line is considered to have a Masera. Chaim Lucky then shared his information with a Heimish hashkacha in America, and with the Eidah in Yerushalayim, excuse me, who also put their name on it, to say that they also accept that breed as kosher.
That's only going 50 cents a year.
So, because the idea is that these people are saying, see, because once we go back 50, 60 years, then we have rebbes that we can attach and say, he ate that chicken. You know what I mean? And he ate that chicken, so then we're good. Okay, so, anyhow, okay, so okay, now, let's go on to the next thing. Okay, we're running longer than we're supposed to, I'm sorry. Okay. Oh, I forgot to show you this. Okay, I forgot to show you. This is a fun pick. Sorry. Okay, this is what happened like this. A university saved breeds from different eras. Okay, and then they raise them without being selective. Okay, in other words, they take this chicken from 1957, the broilers they had in 1957, and they just let them reproduce and make more of themselves without being careful and picking out certain ones like that. Okay, so from three different eras. Okay, so at birth, these three chickens they're not exactly the same. I mean, in 57 they were 34 grams, in 1978 and 2005 they were about 30% bigger. Okay, they were a certain amount bigger at birth. Okay. Now let's look at the 57 ones, okay? When they were 28 days and 56 days old, they were, you see, 300 grams and 900 grams. So in 28 days, they had gone about 10 times, maybe 9 times their size. And then they tripled more than that by 56 days. And that was considered, 56 days, that's what the chicken looked like after however many weeks. Okay, by 1978...
Are they mature, 56?
Well, nowadays they are. Nowadays they sell chickens at that age. Then I think they waited longer. In 78, the chickens from that era were double the size in 28 days, okay, and double the size in 56 days, okay, and in other words, and nothing happened between 1957 to 78 except that they incrementally, they found a chicken, they took chickens from 1957, they said which ones grew, the ones that grew the biggest, they bred those more, and then if those their children, they took the one that grew the biggest, so they weren't adding anything else into it, they were just saying which one grew the fastest, and then just growing more of that same bird to make more and more of them, okay. But then, by 2005, at 28 days, the guy was almost 1,400 grams, which is bigger than at 56 days, the other one, almost bigger than even the other one. And by 56 days, it's more than 4 kilo, okay, so it's double the size of the other one, and 4 times the size of what they used to be in the 50s. And all that is selective breeding. All that is by saying, every time the chicken is born, we find the one that eats the least, grows the most, and has all the features that we want to. It's almost like it's a machine. There's a name, I forgot what the word is, how to use it, how much you have to give him to how much you get back. Like, you know, for every, you know, one piece of corn, and you expect 6 pounds of meat back from him, you know? That's a really good question. They're just running a business, right? Okay, they don't care about it. Anyway, okay.
Didn't Chaim Lucky say that because of these big chickens, now their legs can't support it?
That's not Chaim. That's a different people. Chaim would agree with that. That's just one in Kashivsky. That's a trafish shiloh. A trafish shiloh that they can't handle each other. Yeah.
Just imagine you take people and you marry off, you know, the biggest people. Yeah, you can get bigger people.
Right. You might not believe it, but chickens used to be able to fly when they weren't such fat monsters. You know, they were able to fly. Yeah. Okay, anyhow. Okay, let's go on. We're running out of time. Okay, so turkey. Okay, let's go. We have a few more birds to go. Turkey. Okay, the chicken, I told you, is a bird with the easiest Masara. We've been using them. Everybody's been eating them for a million years. Everyone eats chickens. What? The Gemara mentions a tyrant ago, and people have been eating it, and it's been around. So we talk about what happened.
What?
Pasha says that the tyrant is a tyrant. That's what it is. It's a chicken. But the Masara is pretty clear on it. Okay, and the turkey is the exact opposite of that. Okay, as you probably know, turkey is the exact opposite, which is the Shulchan Aruch said, the Shulchan Aruch says we only eat birds that have a Masara on them. Okay, from the time of Rashi, based on the Gemara, sort of based on the Gemara, we only eat birds that have a Masara. And of course, the question is that turkey can't possibly have a Masara because it was in a part of the New World. Didn't exist. We didn't work beforehand. So how could there be a Masara that this bird is kosher when nobody had that bird? Okay. Okay. So, Okay, so I'm going to briefly tell you four types of ants that throw out that question. Okay, and the first answer is, some people say, okay, you're right, it's not kosher. Okay, so there's some people who don't eat it. They say, well, I won't eat it. There's no way that it can have a messiah. They claim from Kluger held like that. Chaim Wilke doesn't agree with that. He thinks Shlomo Kluger did not think it was shave. That you could talk to Chaim about that. In his farm, he wrote about that.
There was only the Shalom with his family.
And the Shalom, they say over that the Shalom didn't eat it. That's not written in place.
No, but it's Tabla. He said for his family.
That's what they say. It's not clear if it's true.
Then it's not indicative that he said it's not kosher.
Well, we think not a messer. I think it's not kosher. You just think we can't eat birds without a messer. It probably is kosher, but we just don't have a messer for it. Okay, okay, that's one. So that's easy. Okay, that's the easy way to say it. Just as that one. Okay, okay. Number two is. Some people said exactly the opposite. They said is the Gemara says if you know and actually Shukra, if you know all 24 treif birds, you know all 24 treif birds, you can eat anything else that you find. If you can identify all the 20 birds in the Chumash and the four that are merumas in the Chumash, you can eat anything else that you want to.
What do you mean the four that are merumas?
The Torah says 20 birds, and lemina, leminehu, and it teaches us four more other birds. We talked about last time. So if you know the 24 birds, you can eat anything else you want. You find the bird in the street, you can pick it up, you can shaft it first, and then you can eat it because you know that's kosher. So anybody who knew all 24 birds possibly, obviously didn't know turkeys. There's nobody in times of the Gemara who had seen the turkey, so we're good. So we don't know what it is, but we know it must not be one of the 24 birds, because if you can know all 24 without knowing the turkey, then it must be.
You don't know how you end up in the new world.
What do you think?
You don't know how you end up, like how many human beings end up in the new world that Adam Alisha was in, right?
Yeah, for what? So what are you saying?
They also came from the new world at some point.
No, the person put in there. I don't know how the turkeys got there. There are no turkeys. When they found turkeys, it was like a new thing. There weren't turkeys anyplace else.
You said about any bird that was in any exotic location, say a kiwi bird in New Zealand, by the time Europeans got there,
so they could have been
there. So those also become sure.
So, you're right. So one question. So the two questions. Hold on a second. I don't know if it's right, but I'm not 100%. But I think this. One question on this is that when the Torah says 24 birds, okay? 24 birds doesn't only mean there are 24 exact birds that there are. Okay, 24 means 24 species of birds. Okay, like for example, the Gemara says one of them. I forgot which one it is. There's 100 versions of it. Okay, that means to say is when you know the 24 birds, you don't just need to know what they are. You don't need to say that a duchenflies means a hoopoe. That's not enough to know just that piece of information. Okay, knowing that it's a hoopoe is not enough to know that. You also have to understand what's considered the same bird, what's considered not the same bird. What does it take? If I found a hoopoe that was red, would that be considered a hoopoe or it's not a hoopoe? Well, you have to know. So you have to know not only 24 birds, you have to know how to understand what's an extension of another bird. So, like the chickens, we saw a chicken and a Cochin chicken. Are those the same bird or those are not the same bird? So this that part of the understanding of this then is to know how do I connect it or how do I not? So we're fine. How do you? Akron talk lots about this. What's considered the same bird and what's not considered the same bird? So no, maybe if one of the Amoraim would have seen a turkey, he would have said, "Oh, of course, that's the pick another one of the 24 birds. That's a variation of that one." Meaning, he didn't have to have ever seen it before in his life, but when he would look at it the first time, he'd say, that's an extension of this other bird, and that part of knowing 24 birds is their extensions, you know, had what's considered the same men. So that's a caution.
Is there really something that it's turkey similar?
So the answer back to what I just said, you're right, is that turkey was considered like so unusual and so different that maybe there's nothing that's like it. Okay, there's questions whether there are other things that don't look like it.
You can tell it's so unusual.
Okay.
Not a type of historic animal.
Right. Okay. So the other thing is Rabbi Zivotofsky, who wrote about this, famously wrote about turkeys, said that if you know there are some birds that are only New World birds that are for sure treif. Okay, and his three that he lists are bald eagle, peregrine falcon, and osprey that are for sure treif. Those are for sure birds that are treif, and those birds are New World birds. So if we make this rule that says this, if you have something in the New World that no one ever saw before, and it's pasha that's kosher, it's obviously not true. That rule is obviously not true. And the answer, the reason why it's not true is because I just said to you, because you would know that the bald eagle is a variation of one of the other birds that we know that 24 birds that are treif. And someone who knew the birds and knew how to extend them would know that the bald eagle is treif also. Okay.
The eagle is not a New World bird, right? But the
bald eagle is an unusual variation of it. So what I mean is, if you knew eagle was treif, and you saw bald eagle, if you knew enough about these things, you'd be saying, a bald eagle and a regular eagle are similar enough that they're considered to be one min. Okay.
So we can still say the same. Yeah, those are all three similar, but this
similar
is
to something.
Not similar.
Okay. 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 Now. The opposite, the exact opposite of what I just said is that some people said it actually does have a messiah. Because it is so similar to another bird, except to a kosher bird. It's so similar to a kosher bird. The one they pick on is, I forgot which bird they picked on. It's so similar, I forgot which one it is. It's so similar to another bird, it's so similar to a kosher bird, that when they saw it, they said, of course it has a Masorah. It's like saying, I saw white chickens and dark chickens. They said, chicken is a chicken, what's the difference? So they said, no, when they saw this bird, they knew that it was...
The Induk, what was the Induk?
Indik? No, that's Turkey. That's Turkey. Indik.
What's the Induk?
Yeah. So and then together with this is there are those who say is, you know, we have no idea how they decided to eat the first day, how they first eat day, but now that we've been eating it for hundreds of years, so now we have the Masorah. Because I ate it, and my father ate it, and his father ate it, so we have the Masorah. Which
Masorah?
Okay. Well, that's another. And the last is what David Oppenheimer just being Ramazet, which is that we call the bird Turkey, okay, or they call the Indic, the Indian bird, and why they give it such a funny name, why they call it by the name of a country. And the reason is because those were the world powers at that time, and they're the ones who spread this bird around to the new world, to the old world, okay? When they were importing it from the new world, and from there it spread from those countries to other places, to other parts of Europe. So people called it Turkey, like it was the Turkish bird.
They came there, they thought it was from India.
So the people in Europe thought it came from India because that's how they got to it. But the
called America, so America was India.
Right.
That's not why they called it Indian. By that time they had figured that out already. But the people in Europe who got this bird said, oh, it's a Turkish bird or the Indian bird, because it came from that country. That's who was spreading them around. And
it says that a Turkish trader is brought to England as a
three. Okay. And so that opens us for a possibility. It opens us for a possibility that those countries, the Yidden, they are Sephardim. Okay. The Sephardim, the Mechaber says you have to have a Masorah also, just like the Rambam, but the Mechaber is a little looser about cases when he'll let you get away without a Masorah. So Ken Zayin, that when the Yidden in Europe turned to Yidden in Turkey and said to them, this is a kosher bird, they said, of course, you've been eating it for 100 years, you know, of course it's a kosher bird. Okay, they said, okay, you have a Masorah, it's a kosher. We talked about last time, how do you get a Masorah from somebody else? And one of the weaknesses is maybe if you get it from somebody who decides something is kosher, not according to your rules, and maybe that's what happened over here. Okay, anyhow, In the short is, the end of the story is that it's not so clear why we eat them, but just about everybody does. Just about everybody considers them to be kosher. Okay, let's move on. We're over time here. Okay, number three. Number three is ducks and geese. I know, because I didn't want to show you. I really shouldn't show you the screen yet. Okay, so the Mechaber says that any animal that has webbed feet and a wide beak, I told you this last time, is kosher. That's a sim that it's not, if it has the other simon kashers, it can't be a dervish if it has a wide beak and webbed feet. It's kosher. And that includes basically all webbed feet, meaning that the toes are attached to each other. That includes basically all ducks and geese. Okay? That's what Mechaber says. That would be kosher.
Does the turkey have that?
No, not turkey. These are, okay. Ducks and...
Does the turkey have that?
No, it does not have that. We're on to this. No, it does not. Okay, this is a feature of what they call waterfowl. Birds that live in the water need webbed feet to help them paddle themselves along. Okay, it's for ducks and geese and swans. Okay, so basically all those birds would be kosher according to Mechaber. The Rama said, no, we're not samech on that. We're not samech on that, and we only eat with them. Even those birds, we only eat with the Masorah. Okay, so the duck that we are most likely to be considered kosher is the mallard duck. One is the male and one is the female. I forgot which one is which. I think the green head is the male. Okay, I forgot. One of them is the male, one is the female. And this buck, and there's a variation, it's called the Pekin duck, but it's the same basic bird. And that's the bird that we consider to have a Masorah on ducks, and we consider kosher.
Right? So when they serve duck in places as mallard?
Yeah. When you're getting kosher duck, that's what you're getting. Or Pekin, which is a very similar bird. Okay, and now, Rechaim Lucky points out...
just there's a controversy about the mallard duck.
You're going to get... Just wait a second. I'm going to
tell you... There must be some duck that's definitely kosher.
This is the duck that's definitely kosher. You're going to hear about the duck. That's a question in 1 second. Just be patient. 1 second. Okay. So, and Rechaim Lucky points out that a feature to notice which duck is the mallard duck is that its tail curls up. Okay, you see the tail curls up. That's a feature that the mallard ducks have. And while I was working on this, I was walking down North Shore Avenue in front of somebody's house. There's a style duck, and they also, it's obviously it's a kosher Jewish house because it has a mallard duck with curled up. Think about it. Okay, anyhow, so this is the duck.
it's like a turtle.
It's not a turtle. It's meant to be a mallard duck. Okay. It's a kosher duck. They want it. It's a Jewish house. Of course they're going to have a kosher duck. If we can put a chase duck in front of the house.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Scale work if you want. Okay, so that's a duck that's fine. What happened was, in the 1800s, this person, Rabbi Illoui, okay, he was a Rav, had come from Europe, and he became a Rav in New Orleans, okay, forgot where, someplace, and the people eating this duck, which is the Muscovy duck. He's eating the Muscovy duck, okay? And the Muscovy duck, well, no, I'll get to you in a second, I know what you're talking about. The Muscovy duck is noticeable by his red face, okay? Okay, I'm good with that. So he's this duck, and the people were eating it, and he said, why do you eat this duck? They said, because it's kosher. And he says, it's kosher? Why, how do you know this duck is kosher? This is not the duck we had to wear. That's not that duck. It's not, how do you know this duck is kosher also? So he sent the shot back to Europe. It was back and forth. A lot of people thought it was mutter. A lot of people thought that it was mutter. Of course, the Sfardim would eat it, but a lot of Pesachim thought even Ashkenazim could eat it also. And others thought that not. In the end, most people assume that at least in Chathilu we don't eat it. But you should know that every once in a while, these ducks, or the next one I'm going to talk about, by mistake end up in a slaughterhouse. Okay? Now, there's a problem in Shchitas. Okay? The problem is that Shechtim have a job, and the job is to shecht animals. Okay? This is not like one Shechit, you know, in the shtetl who's, you know, they brought him one cow a week. Okay? There's dozens and hundreds of animals or cows passing by. And basically what happens is, when you just get into the rote of doing what you're doing, is that whatever, they stick out a neck, you cut it. Okay? It doesn't make difference what it is. Okay? They can stick out a rhinoceros, it doesn't make difference whatever comes by. I went to the shchita, and they were shechting sheep, okay? And the sheep are all white. Okay? And then one goes by, and it was brown. And I said to the sheikh, I said, what was that? He goes, I don't know. And he goes, oh, it's not different. So it was fine, it was good, but he didn't know, whatever came by, give me your neck, I'll cut it off, you know? It did have, so what happens is, and this has happened by the ducks, even most of the little birds, and again, they hold out the neck, he shechts it. Okay? And they found out at times that by mistake, they had shechted the wrong breeds. Okay? They only wanted to have mallard ducks, and they got the wrong breeds. Okay? They found that afterwards that, oh my gosh, we got a delivery of this instead of that. Muscovy, or the next one, I'm going to tell you in a second. So there are those who will let it, who with the Yevit let it go by. So I'm saying, on the Lechatchila, we assume that these are not kosher birds. Jamaican Jews?
Okay. It said there was a Masorah of the Jamaicans. So let's say it's
trivial. Okay, now, the thing is like this. One thing to think about is like this. It's possible to mate a Muscovy duck with a mallard duck. Okay? And the bird that's produced, when you mate those two birds together, depending if it's a male or female, I'm going to stick with the one which is the Muscovy male and mallard female, makes something called a moulard. Okay, that's what Jesse was talking about. That's the confusion. It's called mallard and moulard. Okay, go figure. Don't have to give it the same name. And that bird, oops, sorry, that's not the word I want. So it produces a duck. It produces an offspring. So there are those who say, of course, that means nature. The Muscovy should be mutter, because since it could breed with the duck that we know is kosher, and it produces offspring, it should be arrived at its kosher.
Why is it so specific? It has to be a male versus.
No. One's called Mular, and one's called Hini. Okay. It produces both, okay. But just the Hini, who thinks of Hini, but he thought, when I said Mular, he thought I meant Mular. Okay, so that's what he thought. So the point is, but Rabbi Lucky points out, the problem is that the Mular duck is sterile. It's not a fully functional bird. And therefore, a Rebbe and a Shachter both thought that the fact that it produced that bird is not a raya, that the parent is kosher. Okay? When we say it produces a child, we assume a regular, functional, normal child. The ones that it produces are sterile, that they weren't able to make of that. However, now you think these birds, at least to me, look pretty similar, the mallard, and the muscovies. Okay, but Rabelski said, this bird, the Indian runner duck, is also kosher, okay? He said, yeah, it's just a variation of the duck, okay? Well, how he came to that, it's hard to understand. Another one is, what's the connection between this bird and...
What's the flat beak
and the... No, so if a Sfardim were good, but we're Ashkenazim, we're trying to say it's the variation of a duck. Rabelski, basically, it's the same. In fact, at the last ACRA conference, they brought in, what's his name? The Deutsch from the Living Tar Museum, brought in... He didn't bring a Indian runner duck. He brought the Indian runner duck. Derbelski looked at it and said, this one's kosher. They stuffed it afterwards. And he went, not a Indian runner duck. He said, the Indian runner duck. Derbelski said it was kosher. Partially, it's because it breeds with mallard ducks. and produces offspring, so that's good. But I mean, to me, again, to us simple folk, this doesn't look anything like the other, like the other duck. But Rebuski was happy, and that's the question. I don't think many people will check.
It looks like a duck.
Okay, we when we finish,
obviously, you know, quacks like a duck. You know,
right. Okay. I said to you about ducks and geese are similar. There aren't so many geese that are types of geese. Bechlal, the ones that we checked, I'll just mention that a kasher called the white Emden and the gray Tulos. Okay. And they're both considered kosher. Emdin, with a B. Not Emdin, Embedin. I don't know how you pronounce it. Okay, and if you, there's also a shiloh about the black geese that you see in the parks. Okay, you know, the black Canadian geese. Yeah. There's no Mussar on them. Pash is very lucky they're probably kosher, but we don't have an official Mussar. So if you want to catch one, as my child was trying to do the other day, he was ready to catch one. He says, but you shouldn't eat them. Okay, now, in Mirchish, next time we're going to talk about, I'm almost finished, I'm going to talk about robins for 1 second, is about the eggs from these birds. Okay? Today we're talking about birds, not eggs. In Mirchish, next time we're going to talk about the eggs of that. Okay, last is, okay, so here's the three ducks. Okay, and to me, the two on the left look a lot more similar than the other one, but, you know, I guess each his own. Okay, the last is robins. Okay? It's a side question, but I'm mentioning it for a specific reason, and that's like this. Oh, nobody eats robins, I should say. Nobody that we know of eats robins. There's no market to sell robins. There's duck, people sell ducks and geese, but they don't sell robins eaten. What's in the shiloh of robins, whether they're kosher or not, is because you can only do shiluach hakein on a bird that's kosher, on a kosher min. And so robin is the thing that people do shiluach hakein on all the time. I think Chaim Blake, he told me also, he said he went to a classroom and he asked them if anybody's father has ever done shiluach hakein. And like, every kid raised their hand, and everyone said they did it on a robin. Okay, that's the common bird that we have around that we can do shluch hakein. So you only do shluch hakein if the bird is kosher.
Sparrow, same as a robin?
It's a variation. It's similar. It's not the same.
And when you say sparrows, when you say robins?
No, because I don't know the kids were talking about. But what I'm talking about, no robins. And we don't know if it's for sure it's kosher, so we do shluch hakein without a bracha. Okay, because it's not 100% that it's kosher. But the it seems the reason why people would do shluch hakein, there's no mesorah that robins are kosher, not really. But the point is that when the shulchan, when the minig became that we only eat birds with a mesorah, seemingly that minig is only for eating the birds, but for doing other mitzvahs for it. For that, we're the regular siman, and we say if a bird is kosher, we assume the bird is kosher. Okay. What do you say?
You had a bracha. Like,
right. Okay. That's fine. That's all right. But the No, but for one point here is that it could be that this chumrah that we only eat birds of the Masara is for eating them. But for other uses, we don't care if it has Masara. But there's a little deeper here that's following like this. Rav Moshe has a tshuva. They asked Rav Moshe about a certain bird. And they want to know, he said, we have in our community in Germany, we used to eat this and this bird. And he says, the bird is the pheasant. But we claim that we used to eat this pheasant. So Rav Moshe went to talk to people from those communities, other rabbanim from those places, and they said, no, they never heard of anybody eating these birds. Okay, so Rav Moshe said, you can't eat the bird. But Rav Moshe said also, as you should know, knowing the name of a bird is not the way to get a Masara. In order to get a Masara, you have to have the bird and see the bird and recognize it. Just saying that we ate bird X, pheasant, and now you want to eat pheasant, that's not enough to do it. You have to, a Masara doesn't come by just having a name in a book. You need to have knowledge of actually someone who, yes, we eat this bird or this type of bird, and then you should be allowed to eat it. Okay? And smach to that, or just to help to understand it, is like this. There was a sefer written a few hundred years ago, written in 1800s, called Zifri Kain. Okay? And the Zifri Kain is written, it's in Italian. The sefer is written in Italian. And it's all about meat and shchita and nikur and things like that. And the beginning of the sefer has two pages of birds, of 30 birds that they consider to be kosher. Okay, now that list of 30 birds doesn't have any of the regular birds. There's no chickens or things like that in it. But all 30 unusual birds that they consider to be kosher.
This is from the book.
I can look up my notes of what each one of them is. So this 30, now most people's copy of this sefer is in black and white. Okay, but Rabbi Deutsch has it in color. Well, he had one page of it in color. He doesn't have the whole thing. He told me the other page he has at home. But one page I got from him. Okay, and if you look at this, okay, so it's 30 birds, and he tells you the name of each of the birds in Italian. Okay, he tells you in Italian what the birds are. So when I looked at this, bird number 16, looks like a robin to me. And what it calls it is, this is what he calls it in Italian, okay, and I don't speak Italian, but this means it's robin like a nightingale, okay? That's what those words in Italian mean, okay? So I said to Chaim, look here, I said, Chaim, so here at least he had on the surface that robins were kosher, okay? He had on the surface, so it looks like a robin to me. Robin's unusual feature is that they have this orangish chest, okay? I said, it looks like that to me, looks like they're kosher, and that's what helps out the color, because, you know, black and white, you couldn't see the orange chest. But anyhow, so he says to me, no. That bird is actually not American robin, that's a European robin. Okay? And the American robin is actually like, I forgot which one, he pointed out a different one. Here, number 9. Is it not on this page? It's not on this page, it's on the other page. And he said, American robin is really like a different one of the birds over there. Okay, so it just brought out to me the sort of what Ramosha was saying, a weakness in a person just looking at names and saying, well, it's a robin. I actually, in this case, I even have a picture that looks like a robin, and therefore I know it's kosher. And Chaim said, no. What you're looking at, okay, to me and you, it looks like, just like every other robin I ever saw. And he said, this is a European robin. Now, maybe I consider one min. And didn't maybe I consider one min. But from what he was talking about, this is not the bird he was talking about, and our bird is like a different one of his birds. Okay? And then just to end off, I will really over time, just to end off is, there are people who have suggested that you could eat guinea fowl and peacock and pheasant. Different people have come up with ideas like that, and communities that actually eat them, almost nobody mainstream considers them to be kosher. There's two other birds, when next time we start talking about the eggs themselves, the two birds that I'm waiting to talk to you about then, is one is a kind of a chicken called, I might pronounce this wrong, Arakana, I might pronounce that wrong, they make blue and green eggs. We'll talk about it when we talk to eggs. And the other one is quail. That's more common. You may have heard of that. People eat quail eggs. Again, almost nobody eats quail itself. We're going to wait for that for next time we talk about eggs.